You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil. Joining us also is Anthony Chang of the Palm Beach Post. So we all went to our respective media days. I went to the Sacramento Kings. David, you went to Orlando. Anthony, of course, you were in Miami because you cover the Miami Heat for the Palm Beach Post, so that makes sense. So, look, we got a lot. We're going to talk about Media Day. We're going to talk about Miami Heat's Media Day specifically with you, Anthony. And we got a few other things that we, of course, have to talk about. But I want to hear, look, Media Day is the day where NBA players turn into models and political talking heads. So I'd like to hear your most ridiculous story or maybe the most ridiculous thing you saw on Monday during your Media Day experience.
The most ridiculous thing I saw. Okay, let me think. Have you seen the picture that Udonis posted hanging on the rim, like upside down?
Yes.
Have you seen that? That was pretty crazy to see in person, honestly.
So I had questions.
Yeah.
Where did that come? Like, what, did he just, he was like, this is what I'm going to do right now? Or was he asked to do it? Or
it looked like a photographer just asked him to do that. And they wanted to take a photo. I don't know which photographer or what, but it looked like someone asked him to do that. And he would just say, okay. And he just, I mean, of course, like he could do that. So, you know,
right.
Any of us were asked to do that, we'd be like, are you nuts? But he made it look easy. So that was pretty crazy. Other than that, you know, just all the guys are playful and just like, just optimistic and happy and in a good mood because, you know, everyone's 0-0 at this point and everyone thinks they can win the championship. So everyone's in a good mood. One thing that stuck out, I guess not really funny, but Justice really stuck out, like his confidence level going into it. You would never think that he missed more than half the season last year. He wants to be an all-star this year. So that was pretty interesting as well.
Wow.
What about?
That's a teaser for our discussion later on, that's for sure.
What about Orlando, David? Because I know, look, did the Magic, did they get any, they got Jonathan Simmons, right? That was like their major move. What was it like in Orlando? I think you texted me and you said they were a little bit more sober about maybe some of their expectations.
Well, yeah, this is the third straight season I've been able to attend Media Day. So I was curious to see what the mood was like because over the past two seasons, they've preached pretty loudly about being able to make the playoffs and convinced, as most teams are, 30 teams are convinced on Media Day that they're going to make the playoffs. Of course, that's not always how it works mathematically.
Everybody's also gained 15 pounds of muscle and lost body fat.
That's right. Yeah, muscle watch is a real thing. But in Orlando, actually, this was kind of, it was tempered, to be honest with you. That's still a goal, but I think they have more realistic expectations and more awareness, and they've shown in the past that it's a process, and they're looking to win games, but win games slowly in the right way, and to continue to build to something. And if that makes the playoff, and that means the playoffs, that's great. And if it doesn't, well, there's always continued growth. But they've got to see consistent growth from their younger guys like Aaron Gordon and Elfrid Payton. They're both entering restricted free agency, so this is a huge season for both of them. But the craziest thing they did is actually, both of you have been there for Summer League, so that's where the most Media Day festivities are. They're in that practice court there.
Right.
But then I kind of sauntered over to where the actual court was, and the lights are off, and they've got like this laser light strobe effect for some kind of video, I guess, that they'll probably be unleashing at some point, like pregame. You know how they always have the pregame introductions, but I guess they're recording it on the same day, just to maximize the amount of time that they use. And it was just like bizarre because it almost seemed like a really bad club where you're hearing this music blaring and it's just like players moving around in the shadows there. That was probably the strangest thing I saw. It wasn't all that weird, but it was just unusual to see.
The Kings were doing the same thing when I was leaving their facility. I was like, what the heck's going on over there? The same thing.
I can't believe they're doing that in Sacramento or in Orlando and not in Miami.
The Heat really should do like their pregame intros from like Live or something, like, or just somewhere awesome. Just there's Sacramento. Well, it's like the biggest club in Sacramento is the Golden One Center. So
don't they have like those fire cannons blaring all the time? Or what was it a couple seasons ago when they had that workout montage somewhere filmed like in the in the garage at America Airlines Arena. Everybody's sweating with their shirts off and working out in the heat and stuff like that. I mean, that was a couple seasons ago, but I'm sure there's probably something like that this year as well.
Yeah, always. They always film their videos in the arena, but I don't know. They must do it a different day. I think they have a different media day, like for their in-house stuff. So I think they have to do it separately. Like sometime during preseason, they get the players and they do that. They film that video.
Excellent.
Well, the coolest thing out of the Kings one was it was an absolute mess, just because they have so many young players that have never done this before. And but Vince Carter, who's been doing this literally longer than some of the players on the rest of the roster have been alive, it just was an absolute pro when it came to media day. He was like doing the photo shoots. He's like, "So you want me to like fake the dunk now, right?" And they're like, "Yeah, that's exactly what you want." I was like, "All right, I got it." So they like fake the dunk, and then at one point there was like the kids reporters corner. That's the Kings were doing. So like the kids would ask the players like really innocent and adorable questions, and then they'd ask them to dunk off of this like Toys R Us rim thing. And Vince Carter did like he took it seriously and did like an off the backboard like windmill. that was like kind of cool to see. I was like, all right, he could still dunk. That's good. So we're gonna get to the rest of actual serious takeaways from Media Day, and that was what this podcast was originally all supposed to be about. But then the Dwayne Wade news happened. He got bought out by the Bulls, signs with the Cavaliers. We have to talk about this. First of all, it's the right move for the Cavs, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on if this was a good move, if this makes the Cavaliers better. I don't think it makes them markedly better. I think it was a move that they had to make given the circumstance, basically, that they really screwed up this offseason in a lot of ways. Some ways were their fault, some ways it wasn't. But it wasn't an exciting offseason for them in a good way. So, you know, you get Wade, who's a buddy of LeBron. It doesn't make them markedly better during the regular season, probably. Maybe you can get a couple of games or some magic out of Dwayne Wade during the playoffs. That's probably the best case scenario. But what I really want to talk about here is this the right move for Dwayne Wade? Because in addition to the Cavs, he was reported to be interested by the Thunder, where he could join Carmelo Anthony. The Spurs were just because I guess they're a winning team. And, of course, the Miami Heat. And I think a lot of fans, Heat fans, were interested in the idea of Wade returning to Miami. But he obviously went back to Cleveland. Is this the right... Do you think this is the right move for Dwayne Wade, Anthony?
I think it is. I think it was the best opportunity for him out of the teams. I mean, he's not going to be given a starting job in Cleveland. And he's already said that. He said that to the Associated Press today, that they told him he'll have a chance to win the starting job. I guess he talked to Ty Lue before he signed, and Ty Lue said, you know, you're going to have a chance, but you're going to have to compete for it, which means Dwayne's probably going to be the starting shooting guard yeah. over J.R. Smith. So the fact that he can, at this age, 35 years old, be a starting shooting guard on a team that's probably going to make the NBA Finals, how do you pass that up, you know, at this point? He's still going to make about $20-21 million this year between Chicago and Cleveland. So you're getting paid $20-plus million, and you're starting for a team that's fighting to go to the finals. I think that's a pretty good situation for him.
Yeah, I mean, I happen to agree. I think, you know, I think as far as his overall fit is concerned, that was probably the best one there. I mean, he probably would have been a better option to start at shooting guard over, say, Andre Roberson in Oklahoma City. But at the same time, Roberson's needed there for his perimeter defense, especially on a team that has, you know, Russell Westbrook in the backcourt. So, you know, Wade probably would have gotten some playing time there. Probably, you know, he probably would have been a starter also. But I don't know that their ceiling is as high as Cleveland's is in the Eastern Conference. So it's probably the best bet. I guess the question is more the reaction that we've seen from Heat Twitter, you know, from the representation of the fan base, whether or not they lose some respect for Wade because, you know, seeing him in a Cleveland jersey is going to stick in a lot of people's craw there. I think they're going to be upset seeing him there, especially when just last season, I think somebody quote tweeted this also this last season at free agency, he said that he wanted to go back to Chicago because it was fulfillment of a dream that he had as a child, that he didn't need to go chase rings.
Right.
And I think it kind of seems like going to Cleveland is exactly that, chasing a ring. But
I
would say it's not exactly that. I'd say that's part of it. But the chance to play with his good friend, I think, is most important. I think that's paramount.
I've been disappointed in the reaction from Heat fans, at least on Twitter. There's a lot of anger seems to be directed at Dwayne Wade, and exactly what people are kind of quoting him by saying, "Oh, I don't need to go chase rings at this point in my career. I want to go live out a dream in Chicago." That was a year ago, and he thought that a year ago. He doesn't think that now. Now he wants to go. In part, he said, "I want to go play for a contender." You know what he didn't do last year? Play for a contender. In his last year in Miami, they were a game away from the Eastern Conference Finals. And in Chicago, it was a complete disaster. It was a complete disaster of an organization. He probably just says, "Look, I want to be somewhere where it's competitive." Maybe after that experience in Chicago, he just decided that it means more to him to compete than he might have thought. You know, and so. I don't like when people are bringing that up. They did the same thing when Durant left. Durant always said, "Oh, I'll never leave," but that was several years before he actually left. Players could change their mind all the time, and it's fine. And I don't like when people just bring this up out of nowhere as if it's a sin that they've just changed their mind and decided they wanted something different than what they wanted a year ago. I don't have a problem with him playing for Cleveland. If you're still rooting against the Cavaliers, I get it. But if you're still at the point where you're rooting against LeBron for personal reasons for leaving the Heat in the first place, or even if you're rooting against Wade for leaving the Heat at this point, there's nothing I could say to you to change your mind. But it's ridiculous. Like these guys did something. It's been a long time. Just kind of like get over it. Like, what is the point of being petty towards the Cavaliers at this point? They've gone, it's not helping. LeBron has gone to the finals every year since leaving the Heat. He's been fine, and Miami's missed the playoffs. Okay. So I'm over it.
No, but one quick question then. I mean, Anthony, maybe you have something to add to this, but do you think it impacts Wade's legacy in South Florida?
No.
I think short term, yes. But I think long term, people will. It doesn't. I think people forget about it as soon as, let's say he comes back next offseason. People are going to forget about it, and it's going to be, you know, the PR machine is going to get it, and it's going to be the best story, you know. People are going to make it the best story in Heat history, he's coming home and all that. But I think
what if he doesn't come back, though?
Even if he doesn't come back, he's going to retire. His jersey will get retired. He'll have a statue in front of the arena. I still think long-term, people are going to remember him for being in a Heat jersey, winning three titles, being the best player in franchise history. Time heals all. Look at, you know, obviously Wade is more, I guess more, you could, he represents the Heat more than Shaq, but even Shaq, I mean, on a sour note. And years later, he's having his jersey retired. Pat Riley's saying all these kind things about him. Heat fans are, you know, applauding him and all that when he comes back. It's a short-term thing. It just happened. It's a fresh wound. You know, I think years from now, people will understand why he made this decision.
I agree 100% with all of that. And as far as his long-term legacy goes, can either of you tell me with certainty how many teams Paul Pierce played for besides the Celtics?
It's three others.
I think it's three, right? But you got
the Clippers, the Wizards, and the Nets.
And the Nets. Okay.
The Nets.
Yeah. So, but like nobody cares. It doesn't matter. And he signed on the last day of his NBA. He signed for one day with the Celtics and retired. And it was a stupid thing.
And that's the Celtics where he's like the 15th best player in Celtics history. It's not like Dwayne Wade, who's the best player in Miami Heat.
It's not a perfect comparison. But my point is, like, Dwayne Wade, he could go play for the Bulls. He could play for the Cavaliers. I do think he ends up coming back to the Heat.
I do too.
Okay. So Heat coaches and players, look, Anthony, you were there on Monday when there was media day. Wade wasn't officially bought out by Chicago until Wednesday, and then he signed with them on Wednesday, the Cavaliers on Wednesday. But you were there, and they obviously the team and the players were asked about it, and they seemed open to it, right?
Yeah. I mean, Eric Spoelstra basically said he wants him to come back without saying it. I think everyone wants him at some point to return, even if it's for just one season. They're definitely open to it. And I just think it's like you guys have been, you know, saying for the last 5 minutes, the timing just wasn't right for either side. I mean, you know, I'm sure that he showed some interest in Dwayne this time because he was a free agent. He's Dwayne Wade, and he's the best player in your organization's history. But it didn't make sense. There's so many guards in this team. Right. You know, Josh Richardson, they're paying him. He needs to play. They're paying Tyler Johnson, who needs to play. Deion Waiters just gave a 4-year contract to. He needs to play. Mike Ellington, you know, you're going to keep him off the court? I mean, there's just so many guys on this depth chart. Where was Dwayne Wade going to fit in? And who was going to have to not play? Who were you going to have to sit on the bench and you know, upset because you have Dwayne coming in, you know, last second in the middle of training camp to join the roster? It just didn't make sense at all, especially when you have Cleveland, who's offering him a spot in the starting lineup. It never made sense from the start. I understand why Heat fans wanted it to happen. It would have been a good story, but when you think about it without any emotion, it just, this season wasn't the right time for it.
Yeah.
Well, right, quick. Well, that might be.
David, one sec. Quick reminder. Yeah. To make sure that you subscribe to David Locke's Locked On NBA podcast for all your national NBA news throughout the offseason, interviews with coaches, scouts, league insiders. Subscribe to the Locked On NBA channel. My recommendation is make sure you're obviously subscribed to Locked On Heat, but then also subscribe, a second subscription, to the Locked On NBA channel. That way you get all of the Locked On NBA podcasts in one feed. It's efficient. It gets you all of the news that you are looking for from all 30 other NBA franchises. So great podcasts all around the network. The Locked On NBA channel, you can find it on iTunes or wherever you get and listen to your podcasts. Make sure that you're subscribed to both. Okay, so David, what were you going to say?
Well, now that you reminded me, Anthony, you're obviously subscribed to Locked On Heat, right?
Yes.
Of course.
I don't believe him. I could hear the lie.
Whoa, I know. That sounded sincere. You're putting him in a spot now. That's why he's not going to ever come back
I'm
here.
I'm subscribed to so many things that I don't even know what I'm subscribed to. So I just
perfect.
I think I am. I mean, I listen to them, especially the ones I'm on and I promote. So I feel like that's enough.
All right. Well, your answer before was a perfect segue onto the rest of the roster. I'd still also like to suggest, as far as Wade is concerned, because he is such a popular figure in South Florida, that he may not come back, right? That's still a possibility that he doesn't. What if, in a world where, let's say, Cleveland advances all the way to the finals and potentially even finds a way to beat Golden State, that's when he calls it a career, right? I mean, after winning a fourth ring, or even if he falls just short, couldn't you see a world where he just decides, you know what, it was a long run, a deep playoff run, deeper than I expected at 35, 36 by that point. I think I'm ready to call it a career. It could happen where he does not come back to Miami next season, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely could. Anything's possible. If they win a championship and he says, this is how I want to go out. But I think it's more likely that he'll play at least one additional season.
Yeah.
And it could be here. I mean, it doesn't have to be here, but it just makes sense, you know, to end. It would just be such – it makes so much sense. All the stories about he promised Udonis that they would play together again and finish their careers together. I mean, if he came back for his final season, you know, next year, you know, maybe he comes off the bench. He doesn't have a huge role, but him and Udonis are able to finish their careers together. He's able to finish in a Heat uniform. It makes sense. He has one, and this is his year, his one final chance, you know, to kind of maybe play in the finals, play on that stage again. And then next year gets that taste out of his mouth and he's okay with being on a competitive team. Maybe he doesn't, you know, he's not a title contender, but he's on a playoff team. And he'll be okay with that. But I think he really wants to get on that stage again. He wants to prove that he still can compete at that level. Mm-hmm. I think this is that year that he's going to get that opportunity, obviously. But next year could be the right time when he says, okay, you know, I'm coming back to Miami.
Well, we've been warning Heat fans on this program for a long time now that he was going to be signing with the Cavaliers. And then next year he'll be back with the Heat, and that's the prediction I made, and I'm standing by it. It just makes all the sense in the world. You're exactly right, Anthony. The timing just wasn't right. There's no room for him. It would just been an awkward fit. It wouldn't have worked. But there's, you could see the makings of how it would work next year, right? Tyler Johnson is going to be the second highest paid player on the Heat if he's on the Heat next season. If Miami tries to, if Pat Riley could somehow get off of that contract, and paying him $19 million next season, then all of a sudden you have that six-man guard spot available. And that might be a position that Dwayne Wade could fill in. It just makes more sense for it to be next year. We've got to talk about Deion Waiters, too, because, Anthony, you wrote today for the Palm Beach Post that Waiters decided against ankle surgery last March because it would have sidelined him for anywhere between 8 to 10 months. So take us into that report. And mostly, is this a concern considering that the Heat just signed him to a 4-year contract?
Yes. I think it's a concern. The Heat are downplaying it, but I think it is concerning. But I'll take you back to media day on Monday when this all kind of came out. Deion was the final player to come out to talk to us that day. And a lot of the reporters that, you know, had already asked him questions. So it was just me, Manny, I think Barry Jackson. And it was like one of the final questions. I'm just, you know, not thinking anything of it. I asked him, so how's your ankle? It's 100%, right? I'm guessing, you know, it's been 6 months. He's like, actually, no, it still hurts and it's still swollen. And, you know, we're going through treatment, but, you know, it's still something I'm dealing with. And all of us were just like, what? So kind of mushroomed from there. And the last 2 days he's been asked about it. And today, you know, someone, I think Manny Navarro from the Miami Herald finally asked him, so if you would have had surgery, how long would you have been out? And he said, you know, 8 to 10 months. So I didn't want to be out that long, which it makes sense. I mean, he was entering free agency. If you enter free agency,
right,
just, you know, fresh off of ankle surgery, and you're not going to be able to play until December or January, he's not getting that contract. And the Heat weren't in a position to say, don't worry about it, Deion. We'll get you, you know, have the surgery. We're going to give you the contract. We're going to sign you. We want you to have the surgery, because they didn't even know if they were going to keep him, because they were trying to go after Gordon Hayward. So they weren't even in a position to do that. So it was just a very tricky situation. And I think now, you know, Spoelstra said Deion looks good. He looks as quick as he did last year before the injury. But the fact that it's still swollen 6 months later and he's having to go through hours of treatment before every practice because of it, and the season hasn't even started yet, that is not good.
But they were aware the Heat were aware of this, right, before they signed him.
I mean, I would think so. That's the part I can't explain. I mean, I would think so, and you would like to think they did their due diligence and said, okay, it's not, you know, it's something that he'll have to deal with for maybe the next couple months, but we feel like he can overcome it and it will get better. You know, Deion does say it's getting stronger and it's improving, but...
Right, but that's just a player talking.
Yeah, ankles are tricky, and if it's not 100% in basketball, that is, you know, that's easy to sprain every very, very frequently, you know, if your ankle's weak. So that, you know, it's definitely something we're going to have to monitor for the rest of the season. It's not going to go away anytime soon.
But this is the confusing thing then, is like to build on what you guys are both saying, you know, he probably engaged with the rest of the team in off-season workouts, right? Whether it was at the arena, or let's say they gathered in L.A. or someplace, or maybe even in Philly to run a couple of games. At some point, he got together, he practiced, he played over the off-season, and he's been putting pressure on it. He's been coming into camp. Everybody knows this. And then Spoelstra is saying that he's running as quickly as he ever did, if not quicker than last season. But then at the same time, it's also swollen and a lingering problem. So which is it? Is it both? Is it neither? Is somebody not telling the full truth? Or is maybe the Heat just trying to save face and kind of look, trying to say that, you know, they're optimistic about it, but in reality, they might be much more concerned than they're letting on?
I think it's somewhere in the middle. And I mean, we have to remember, he sprained that ankle earlier in the season, a couple of weeks before he finally had that injury that forced him to miss the end of the season. So he was playing on it before he had that final injury, and he was playing fine. So, and he actually broke the ankle in high school. So he's had issues with his ankle before, and he's played through it, and he's got, you know, he's been able to be effective. So maybe he will be able to be effective. I think the concern is this going to be an injury that's going to pop up again, because it is not 100%. You know, maybe he will be able to play, you know, to his normal level, and he'll be effective, and, you know, won't be as much of an issue as it seems like right now. But I think the main concern is that stuff, if it's not 100%, it's going to pop back up at some point in an 82-game schedule. So is how many games will he be able to play this season, and how many games will he have to say, you know, on a back-to-back, after a long flight, I can't play tonight. You know, that's, I think, the concern.
And it's not a coincidence that Waiters, the unlikely bonuses that we've heard about that Waiters has in his contract, is based on games played this year. He might not get the full guaranteed contract if he doesn't play because of an ankle injury. So that's there. This sounds similar to me about like when Dwayne Wade was at Marquette and he decided that he didn't want to get a certain procedure done on his knee because he would have to miss the Final Four, or the March Madness tournament. And that ended up being costly for him throughout his entire career, to the point where he's had knee issues his entire career since college, since entering the NBA. I wonder if Waiters would be better off just taking his lumps for 10 months, but going through the correct procedure and taking something preventative, as opposed to just kind of trying to deal with it. But we'll see. And for the Heat, I could see why they're coming out and being optimistic about it, because when it comes down to it, Waiters is a trade asset. And if the Heat are going to try to make a move for an all-star at any point, then Waiters might come into play as a potential player in that package. So if he's hurt, if he's dealing with this ankle thing, or if the perception is that he's damaged goods, then that hurts his trade value too. So that's a whole other thing you have to take into consideration here. Another thing we wanted to talk to you about was Kelly Olynyk compared this Heat team to his early Celtics teams. So what do you see the similarities between the two, those early Celtics squads that he first joined and this Heat team that he's on now?
Yes and no. I mean, I see it because there wasn't that much star power on that team, and it was a team that kind of developed together, had a lot of young pieces that kind of grew together and improved throughout the years. Olynyk's first year, they were 25 and 57. Mm-hmm. And then, the second year, 40 and 42. And then from 40 and 42, which is, I guess you can say, was the Heat's last season, where they went 41 and 41, where you can kind of compare those years. After that, Boston had an 8-win improvement. They went from 40 wins to 48 wins, which is a pretty big improvement from year to year in the NBA. And that's the improvement I think Heat fans and even the Heat themselves expect this season. There is some similarities, just because it is a bunch of kind of gritty, tough guys, like Olynyk pointed out, that play hard, and maybe they don't rely on superstars. I think there is a similarity.
Yeah, I guess a lot of that growth came with the hiring of Brad Stevens, obviously, and kind of getting that group to gel and implementing his vision and having that be a successful product on the court. But it also included some really fortuitous trades on their part. They were tanking. They weren't necessarily expected to do particularly well. And then all of a sudden they acquired Jay Crowder. They acquired Isaiah Thomas. And then from there, that team really started to mesh and play at a very high level. And obviously Thomas played at an extraordinary level last season. And I think that's probably not something that this Heat team can duplicate. I mean, we've talked about it before. I think the last time you were on the podcast, one of the questions that one of our listeners had was if there was anybody on this roster who might be able to make that kind of huge leap. And I think, Goran Dragic probably is a good candidate to make the All-Star team if he plays at a very high level. Hassan Whiteside's probably the best candidate. But either one of those doesn't make this team a superstar-laden team. It doesn't help make that push from a 41-win team to a 50-plus win team, at least not in my opinion. Do you agree on that?
One huge difference with the Celtics and the Heat is that the Celtics had all those great draft picks as assets, which they were able to use to, flip them for this year. They flipped them for Kyrie, and they were able to use those picks to lure Gordon Hayward, with the promise of, having those assets to build around him. The Heat don't have that. They don't have those assets to offer in trades. So the Boston, I think, was in a better position, from that respect, to kind of keep building and keep improving from year to year.
So I'm hesitant to compare anybody to these Celtics teams. And every team outside of Boston wants to think that in some way, shape, or form that they could be one of the, like the Celtics over the last several seasons, because of the way they went from trading all of their assets right when they should have, like timing their trading of the big three at a perfect time, getting this King's ransom from the Brooklyn Nets, and being able to, and just the way that they were able to manage those assets. I think every team hopes that they can get 50% of the kind of return on their assets like Boston has in these last few seasons. I could see why Olenek would compare the two teams. I get it. The common thread here is that the Celtics and the Heat have the two best coaches in the Eastern Conference, and it's not close. That's a good thing. The Heat are very much a system team, as much as Brad Stevens gets loved for his in-game adjustments and his scheme and his five-out system that he likes to try to run. Spoelstra is very much, he could plug and play a lot of players, and players just tend to just magically get better defensively when they're with the Heat, and that's part of the defensive and the offensive system, so I get that part. I want to talk about Justice Winslow, though, to switch gears here. Justice Winslow, like you talked about earlier, Anthony, very confident during media day, despite only playing 18 games last season. I have a quote here. He says, "Once that thing," meaning shooting, "gets figured out, you can't say that there's much I can't do. I can bring up the ball. I can guard your best player. I can rebound. I can find my open shooters. I can push it on the break. Once that minor detail gets settled out," and we can argue about if that's indeed a minor detail of shooting, "we're going to have a fun time." So that's Winslow's quote. He was very confident when dealing with reporters. What did you make of Justice Winslow and his demeanor during media day?
I've come to expect this from Justice because he's pretty confident. But it was, it took me kind of, it caught my attention, I'll say. Him saying, "I want to be an all-star," you know, and he feels like he can make an all-star, and he feels like he's going to surprise people this year, that people don't even see that, you know, what's coming for him this year. Just the way he spoke after the kind of year he had last season, this caught my attention. And honestly, last offseason was the same thing. I remember after Dwayne left, Justice put a lot of pressure on himself, saying, and even other reporters talking about it, him saying, you know, that he wants to be a leader of his team and he wants to, mm-hmm. you know, lead the next era of Heat basketball. And then he said all that, and then the season starts, and obviously injuries derail his year, and, you know, he didn't have the year that everyone expected. And then this season, he's saying the same stuff, which, look, I'm all for it. But he has to know that he's putting a lot of pressure on himself, and if he doesn't perform, you know, he's gonna see some criticism from fans, from media. So it just caught my attention. I think the Heat are optimistic that he's gonna be improved this year as an overall player, not only as a shooter. He's lost weight. He lost about 10 to 15 pounds. He looks like he's in the best shape of his life. So we'll see. I mean, it's gonna be interesting to see the jump he can make this year.
Yeah, I don't like it. I got to be honest with you. I mean, especially I'm hearing that you're saying he sounds confident, but you accurately point out that he sounded confident last year. And I remember talking to him last summer in Summer League, and that was right after the news had come out that Wade had signed with Chicago, and he was talking about being that playmaker and taking a leadership role with the team and everything else. And then when the season starts again, like you said, he faltered in that role, and you could see him visibly struggling out there as he was trying to do way too much. He was pushing the ball up and doing a pretty decent job, but the offense was just not there. And yeah, with the other injuries on the team, I think it certainly hurt his chances of being able to take that next level. But I mean, I didn't see anything from him in those few games at the start of the year that gives me much confidence going into this season that he's going to be able to take a huge leap. So, I mean, I don't know. And Wes and I and some other people we've talked to, We tend to think that Josh Richardson is probably the better option to start at small forward. You know, he's a better shooter. He can play high level of defense. He played small forward for 80% of his minutes last year. So there's a number of reasons why Josh would probably be the best option to start. But if Justice thinks he's the best option, I mean, if he thinks he's going to make the All-Star team, it almost inherently has to require him being the starter in order to do so. And I don't know if that's necessarily the best thing for Miami moving forward.
It does seem to me, and I'm hoping I'm wrong here, but look, like you're saying, like his position in the lineup is questionable. We don't know if he's going to be a starter. He doesn't know if he's going to be a starter. A lot of people are questioning what his role on the team even is or what his ability is, because he didn't play well when he played last year, and he didn't play most of the season. It seems to me that he might be overcompensating as an answer to the questions that are surrounding him in his game. That's at least what I take away from it when the words are coming off the page to me. I don't know if, Anthony, it seemed like that to you. Was it a bark, not so much a bite situation? Because when he's on the floor, he didn't look confident last year. It seemed like he was trying to force the issue with jumpers, but he was hesitant to take certain shots or what he was going to even do as far as handling the ball on the offense. He seemed hesitant. He didn't seem like a confident player when he was playing.
Yeah, I agree. But I think the injuries really played a role in that. That wrist injury happened really early in the year.
Right.
And not to make excuses for him, because he's not the best shooter. That's obvious. But, you know, when you hurt your left shooting wrist and you're forced to miss, I don't know how, it was a double-digit amount of games he missed because of the wrist. He was playing through that before that.
Right.
That's going to impact your shooting. I mean, you saw Josh Richardson last year was dealing with a similar injury, and his shooting really took a dip the first half of the year as well until he was able to get healthy. So I think that was part of his struggles. And then obviously the shoulder just ended his season. But we have to remember, he was 20 years old last year. I think he's still trying to find his role in the NBA. He's still trying to find himself as a person. Like, he's a young guy, and he is a confident guy. And I think that's part of his youth, just him kind of maybe, like you said, overcompensating for his struggles on the court. But I really do think he still feels like he can be he thinks he can be an all-star. I mean, I don't necessarily think that jump – I don't see that jump happening for him. I think he'll be better this year. But he thinks he can be an all-star. He thinks he can make a jump similar to Jimmy Butler did in Chicago or Kawhi did in San Antonio. I mean, he really thinks that he can make that kind of jump. It's happened before. I mean, Jimmy Butler was not that great of a player early on in his career. And from one year to the next, he turned into an all-star. So we'll see. I mean, I would say chances are against it, but he's confident. And the Heat feel like he has the ability to be that. But like you said, I don't think he's the best option to start. With all that being said, I don't think he's the best option to start. I agree. I think Jay Rich fits so much better with Dion and Goran in the starting lineup, just because he can be a really good spot up shooter. And you need that with guys that can drive to the basket like Goran and Dion. So I really think Justice probably will come off the bench this season. So if that's the case, he's probably not gonna be an all-star. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll see if he can live up to all the words he's said so far.
Yeah, I don't want this to come off as a negative against Winslow either. I'm a huge fan of Justice Winslow. I've had to defend him multiple times on this show to guests and mailbag questions, and sometimes.
Oh, I thought that was a knock on me. Yeah, that was a knock on me.
But Winslow does have certain things that you can't teach. I mean, his defensive instincts are elite, and it's not a question, and that's something you can't teach. His athleticism is crazy. He's got a great first step. He does have underrated court vision. He's absolutely right about that, and a passing ability that's off the wall for a player at his position. There's a lot of great things and things to love about Justice Winslow. It's unfortunate that the one thing he does struggle with is shooting, and that's the thing that's so important in today's game. But I think you can get over that, and you can get better at that, as people like Kawhi Leonard and Jimmy Butler have shown, and even Draymond Green. But
I wanted to ask Anthony a quick question about that, because we heard so much about Richardson and his rookie year working diligently with Eric Spoelstra, and Spoelstra drilling him and forcing him to take a number of three-point shots until he got to a certain level where he was making, 70 out of every 100 three-point shots or something like that. Is there that same kind of focus on Winslow? Is somebody working with him as closely to get him to that point? Obviously, the injury kind of screwed everything up. And his rookie season, he was playing. He was coming off the bench, but he was playing more on a team that was going to eventually make the playoffs. Is that the case now during the offseason? Has somebody been working with him on his shooting?
Yes. Shooting coach Rob Fedor, who the Heat, hired, but they promoted him to shooting coach last season.
Right.
Has been working with Justice all summer, and Justice has been, in the Heat facility all summer working. And as soon as his 6-month recovery timetable ended in July, he's been playing pickup games. And when he went up to Duke to visit Duke, he was playing pickup games up there. So the Heat have been happy with that. They've said it. They said he's been working hard. He's been eating better. He's been taking care of his body this offseason. Like I said, he's lost weight. He wants to lose even more weight, you know, in the preseason. He's looking to drop a total, I think, of like 20, 25 pounds, which he looks, I'm telling you, even already, I think Josh Richardson made a joke. He said, I call him the skinny dude. That's his nickname now. I mean, he looks lean.
He was big last year. He bulked up last year. Yeah, he was big.
He did. I agree. Like, I was telling somebody today that I always thought he was a little too big last season. I mean, he mm-hmm. wasn't in bad shape, but he just looked big.
Yeah, it seemed like he was bulking up. Yeah.
So, I mean, he said he feels lighter. He said he feels more explosive. So I think he really has been taking that next step as far as off-season routine and dedication, you know, to answer your question.
So Spoelstra mentioned he was talking about bringing back the same team. So I wanna get your BS meters out. He says this is ultimately what everybody wanted. David, let's start with you. What's your BS meter say? Is it no BS, medium BS, or high BS, or however else you want to answer? Because I'm making this up on the fly.
I'm saying it's medium BS. I think he's happy to have this group back because, from a coach's perspective, even, you know, to echo some things that I heard in Orlando, they were, you know, this is the first season in a long time that Frank Vogel is there. You know, he was there last year. He's there this year. Before that, they've had so much turnover in coaching. So I could see, from Miami's perspective and Spoelstra's perspective, it's great to have the same guys in place. You don't have to necessarily coach anybody. I think, you know, you've got Adebayo, obviously, and Olynyk. But for the most part, it's the same exact roster, other than a couple of fringe rookies and guys like that. Guys on, you know, they're mostly going to wind up in the G League. So I think there's some consistency there, and it's easier to coach them up in that sense. But I think all that goes away if you have a player of Hayward's caliber there. So yeah, it's all fine and good for what you have. You make the most of it. But I think he'd sacrifice that in a heartbeat, that consistency in a heartbeat, to get a guy like Hayward.
Anthony, what's your BS meter say?
I'll agree and say medium BS. I think they did want most of this team back. I think maybe Deion, they would have gotten Gordon, Hayward, maybe Deion wouldn't have been back. But I still think if they get Gordon, Hayward, they find a way to keep James Johnson, and they find a way to keep Wayne Ellington. And just like that, most of the team is back, you know, because Gordon's still under contract, Hassan's still under contract. You know, you drop Bam out of bio, you know, so Udonis is back. So I think, for the most part, they really did want to bring this team back, and that was their plan all along. But they would have traded Gordon Hayward for, you know, they would have traded Deion Waiters for Gordon Hayward if they could have.
So I'm gonna go with no BS here.
Ooh.
I'd go as far as to say I don't think they actually really wanted Gordon Hayward, and that's. I've given this some. I don't think they really wanted Gordon. I think they went after Gordon Hayward because they felt like they had to. And it was the right move. And they did have to. They had to go after Gordon Hayward. And they would have signed him if Gordon Hayward would have said yes. And they would have been happy with it. But I think in their heart of hearts, and maybe they didn't know it at the time, but they really did just want this group back. And I think Eric Spoelstra specifically wanted this group back. You look at how this roster is. Gordon Hayward would have been, he was a redundant position of Justice Winslow and even Josh Richardson to a certain extent. James Johnson, even, who could play both forward positions. And look, if you have Hayward, all of a sudden it's your lineup kind of, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense where you go with Justice Winslow from there. You know, you've got some questions. I'm not saying that's not, from a roster construction standpoint, it's still the right move is to sign Hayward if you can. I really think that this team wanted to come back together, that they valued just playing more basketball together because they didn't get a chance to make the playoffs last year. That really irked them. That really bothered this team. And I do think that they preferred, like, you know what? Screw All-Stars. We don't really want them. We're going to do it because we have to do it. We can't not chase Gordon Hayward. But Pat Riley was always open about not being optimistic that Hayward would sign there. And I think that they truthfully wanted this team back. Like, that was more appealing to this team. Look, Hayward signed in Boston, and they moved very quickly. They had the plan in place. Now, you could credit that to proper planning, but I do think that maybe it was almost a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy too, maybe? I don't know. I have no BS. I think that they truly did want everybody back, and maybe that's what I think. I don't know. So
I think you're crazy, Wes. I think you're just making that up right now.
I think you're crazy too, but no, I'm kidding. But I think
is that because of my answer or just separate? Just in a general
sense. Oh no, no. The answer is like that's the hottest take I've ever heard.
Ooh. Thank
on
you.
On this podcast.
Oh, anyway. All right. You gotta watch ESPN more.
That's good. No. I'll take the good these days, so don't be too upset about that. But I think the players want, like, if you're saying everybody, I don't know about everybody wanted this, but I think the players definitely wanted this team back. I think even Coach Spoelstra probably wanted this team back.
He didn't want to deal with the whole he seemed excited about the fact that he didn't have to cut anybody, that this was the team.
Yeah. Exactly. But maybe, you know, I'm sure Riley, he's always looking for that next big thing. He wants star power on the team.
Right.
He's probably one of the guys who wanted to kind of chase Gordon, I'm sure. Sure. But I think for the most part, the players and Spoelstra and his staff, I think they're totally fine with just running it back.
I'll also say this. I don't know that. I'm not sure Riley was sold on Gordon Hayward as a star, but I think he was absolutely sold on Kyrie Irving. And he really did want Kyrie Irving. But he also knew that he didn't have the horses to get it done.
You're projecting, dude. You're projecting. That's you. You and your Kyrie Irving look.
I don't know. We can debate that.
Yeah. All right. Okay, quick question, Anthony. Quick question. I was curious. Okay, the new additions to the team, aside from those fringe guys, Olenek, Adebayo, it's only been a couple of days. How are they fitting into the whole culture? I think a guy like Olenek in particular, a guy willing to mix it up a little bit, he'd probably be appreciated pretty easily. Have you seen anything? Have they stood out? I know Olenek's a pretty smart guy. He's a scrapper, et cetera. Do you see any signs of him fitting in or fitting out?
Fitting in. Olenek, everybody has good, obviously has had good stuff to say. They're not going to say talk bad about him, I guess. But right.
Maybe wait a couple weeks before they start talking crap about him.
It's early. Everyone's friends right now. So, but I think his skill set, like Goran was saying today, he makes the game easier for so you know everybody on the court because he can pass, he can shoot, he fits well with Deion and Goran because he can stretch the floor and open up the paint. He's been good so far, and I think he's gonna play a big role in this team. I don't see him starting. Right. But I definitely see him as a backup center for Hassan. I really think most of his minutes are going to come at center for the Heat, just because I don't see him being an effective defender against power forwards in today's NBA, just because he's so big and he might not be quick enough to guard them. But I think as a backup center for Hassan, giving a different look like that, you know, for a guy who can shoot threes and pass the ball like him, I think that's going to be good for the Heat. So I definitely think he fits well. And so far, all indications have been positive for him.
What about Adebayo?
As far as Bam, you know, they've said they like his work ethic and all that. But the one thing that everyone keeps pointing out regarding Bam is his athleticism.
Right.
Goran called him a freak of nature today, and yesterday Deion said that nobody asked him about Bam. He just said, Bam, like that guy, you gotta watch out for him. Like he is crazy athletic. He jumps so high. He is a monster. Like he's like, you know, he said Bam is raw, but when he learns the game, when you pair him with Hassan Whiteside, you know, near the basket, like that's gonna be crazy. Makes me think the vision is of Bam maybe being a power forward in the future. Pairing next to Hassan, just having those two rim protectors, you know, that's gonna be on the watch, and it'll be interesting to see if he gets some, you know, significant minutes this year. I don't know early on if he will, but so far, players, coaches have been impressed with him.
We've talked a lot about him as a center. Do you see him playing power forward?
I think he can play both. I'm not as convinced as I am with Kelly, where I'm like, I think Kelly's going to play center, backup center for sure. But I think Bam can play is an option for both. But I just think minutes wise this year, at least, I think power forward is where he can probably get some more playing time.
Okay.
And I think they have a vision for Bam of maybe being a guy who could make plays off the dribble, can shoot jumpers. As you saw in summer league, him doing a euro step and leading the fast break. Where if he's going to use that skill set, I could see him probably more as a as a power forward
almost,
in the future.
Almost like how Minnesota uses Karl Anthony Towns and Gorgui Jang together, kind of have
exactly.
Okay, exactly.
Twin tower type, and you know, Bam is not gonna. I think everyone, even myself, when he got drafted, we were like, oh, he's gonna be, you know, he's a guy who is pretty much primarily a post player.
Right.
But I think we saw that he has the potential to be more than that.
Mm.
So that's something that, you know, the Heat are going to try to build on moving forward.
I like that.
Has he gotten a little more comfortable in the interview setting, or is he still is he very frugal with his wording?
No comment. No, he's good. He's good. I you know, he's very cooperative and all that, but you know, it takes some time for some guys to open up. He's new, so we'll see. I think as the season goes on, he'll be you know, better as far as, you know, media and maybe opening up more. Yeah. Right now, he gives you what you need. He's very cooperative. He's polite. You know, it's just right now he's still trying to figure it out. So
I
just think he needs time. I think he needs time.
Yeah, I saw that Goran Dragic was awarded the Professional Basketball Writers Association Award for his cooperation with the media. Did you have a vote in that award?
Yes, I did. I think it was unanimous. Everyone voted for Goran. He's the best. He's like amazing as far as an interview. And as far as not only is he a good interview, but the fact that he's a good interview, as probably he's the best player on the team, or at least one of the two best players on the team right now. And he's as cooperative as anybody on the roster. He is like so accessible. Will talk to you about anything. You know, funny. Just he's great. He's great.
I think by the end of this year, the people recognize him more as one of the better point guards in the NBA, because we've talked about it 1,000 times. He's overlooked. And if he's got the media on his side, that's a good thing for him. Anthony, before we wrap up here, do you have any other takeaways from Media Day?
Media Day, no. I had a takeaway actually from today I wanted to share from practice.
Nice.
You know, Spoelstra today, I think, had an interesting comment. Said it was a no-cut camp, which basically he tipped the Heat's hand as far as who they're going to keep on the 15-man roster, because right. If they don't cut anybody, that means they're keeping the 15 guaranteed contracts they have, which is the last two spots would end up being A.J. Hammonds and Jordan Mickey. And then the other four guys, Derek Walton has got a two-way contract, so he'll end up in Sioux Falls. And then McCree, Matt Williams, and Larry Drew will be funneled to Sioux Falls as well, because they're on affiliate contracts. So he kind of tipped his hand and said, you know, we're going to keep the 15 guaranteed guys, and the other four guys, you know, with the new two-way rules, we don't have to cut anybody. We're going to keep – they're probably going to make – I would say Matt Williams is an option for the second two-way contract.
Go Knights.
And then the other two guys will be affiliate players. Once they clear waivers, they will be funneled to Sioux Falls. So I thought that was interesting, because usually there's a few cuts and there's some guys that don't end up, you know, in the Heat system, but this is different. And Spoelstra said it. He said, I like the feel of this camp because everybody on this roster knows we're invested in them long term, which is totally different from pretty much every other season.
I think it's a good thing.
I think that was pretty cool. Yeah, it's a good thing. Very good thing.
All right. Well, I got another question for you. What was the last chain restaurant you went to? I won't let this
Olive
go.
Garden.
Olive Garden?
Olive Garden.
Are you a millennial, yeah. Anthony? You're considered a millennial, right? Yeah. You fall in that category. So I was just reading something that Olive Garden has like hit a chord with millennials, apparently. Is it because of the breadsticks? Did you go because of the breadsticks?
Oh, my God. I only go because of the breadsticks. And like, that's the only reason I go. So that is why. That's my connection. My connection point are those unlimited breadsticks. And then I saw a commercial. The reason I went, I saw a commercial that they were doing like a get a pasta for dinner and you can take the same one home for free.
Yes.
I was like, man, that's a really good deal. They have some good deals. So, man, I'm not embarrassed. I love Olive Garden.
It's Olive Garden, see, it's not just for millennials, though. My father-in-law, who's in his late 60s, that is like his go-to restaurant for every family occasion. Like birthdays, hell yeah, let's go to Olive Garden. Graduations, Olive Garden.
What's
it
the
is.
Slogan? I mean, Italy away from home? What is it? It's something. dumb like that. I forget what's
on your family or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's something with family.
Yeah, yeah. My girlfriend's obsessed with the Supa Toscana or whatever. It's like this, this soup and breadsticks. You get that, and the breadsticks are just, it's good to go. I mean,
and it's funny too because he always does that the most fattening dish. Like he always contemplates the menu, like he doesn't know exactly what he's gonna get, right. And then he winds up getting that tour of Northern Italy that's like four different dishes. And
he's like debating between like a Caesar salad and then just like four lasagnas, and he ends up with like the four lasagnas.
Absolutely.
All right. Is there anything else that we need to cover before we get out of here?
No, I don't know. We could talk chain
restaurants. Anthony, any tips for us? Anything that you think, since you're a frequent listener, anything you think we should improve on for next season?
Don't have me on anymore if you want good.
Wow. That's like a soft way of saying he doesn't want to be on here.
Yeah,
I think
so. He's like, I don't want to tell you about my Olive Garden experience.
I'm kidding. I have no tips because you guys are way better at this than I am. So just keep doing what you're doing.
There's a reason we keep having you on. Well, that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. You can send mailbag questions or get information about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Reminder to send us your mailbag questions for our next mailbag, probably next week. Or you could tweet them at us using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Follow us on Twitter. And if you're not subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Oh, and don't forget, follow Anthony on Twitter at Anthony_Chang. Can't forget that. All right. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Thank you.